Dive deep with us into the trenches of professional sports. From the electric charge of the hardwood to icy battles, the strategic plays, and to the global passion, we cover it all where no sport is left behind.
Join your hosts, Justin Williams, and myself, Nee Wallace Bruce, as we break down game strategies, dissect play performances, and give you the insider scoop on what's happening both on and off the field of play. We are the Pro Sports Podcasters. Make sure you subscribe and leave a review. Welcome back to the Pro Sports Podcasters. I am your co-host, Mr. Neil Wallace Bruce, and I'm joined by the other half of the hosting team for tonight, Mr. Justin Williams. He's coming back from the Atlantic Coast, where he took in the Juno Awards and actually performed at the Juno Awards. Justin, how are you doing?
I am living life right now. I am so happy to be here. It's fun to be back in Ontario. I do kind of miss my East Coast family, but I'll be back in July for a wedding anyways. So,
goodness gracious me. It really is a case of where in the world is Justin Williams. But it's a pleasure to have you safe and sound back in the province of Ontario. And it's a pleasure to have you listening to the podcast wherever you are. You could be anywhere in the world, but you chose to tune in, and we appreciate that. So make sure, if you haven't already, you drop a review and say nice things about Justin, because that helps him, it helps me. It's all good in the world. Speaking of good things in the world, we're going to catch up with our friend from 92.9, The Game in Atlanta, because a lot has been happening down in the Peach State. So without any further ado, it's the executive producer and host, who are the most, Mr. Abe Gordon. How you doing, Abe?
Hey, I'm doing good, guys. Appreciate you having me, man. Second time, not to say that I passed the test. I did enough to be called upon once again. I'm very happy to be with you guys.
It's a pleasure to have you on. And yeah, Atlanta is a hotbed of activity. Hot Atlanta by name, hot Atlanta by nature. Abe, I got to give you your laurels. I got to give you your flowers, because the Falcons have a new quarterback. His name is Kirk Cousins, in case you don't know. And if I'm not mistaken, you had the first interview with Kirk. He pretty much stepped off the plane in Atlanta, and the mic was put in front of him, and you were talking to him. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, it was really cool. Obviously, he kind of landed there in Flowery Branch at the Falcons facility, did a press conference for assembled media, but I think I got the first one-on-one with him here, and it was great to chat with him. And the fallout, the reaction was really interesting, because there was a number of people who were like, I don't know, man, like, I wasn't in on Kirk, but after hearing him, like, I'm fully sold. And so it was great to see that sort of reaction, not just on my behalf coming from my content, but just people who are buying into the Atlanta Falcons and the decisions that were being made. There was a lot of second guessing of Kirk Cousins, but it just feels like everyone is on board now. It was really interesting to see that kind of through his press conference and through his interview win people over. It's not always easy to do that, but he certainly accomplished it.
No doubt about it. Now, The NFC South is a little bit open, one might say, in terms of competition, but Kirk was definitely the prized recruit from free agency. He would have to have been at the top of the list when you look at some of the deals that went down. So what's the feeling in Atlanta right across the board with this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, you look around the NFC South and you try and figure out who got better. And, like, the Bucs brought back Baker Mayfield, brought back Mike Evans, brought back a number of their pieces, but they're just running it back from last year. They didn't really improve. The Panthers were so far away, even if they did improve a little bit, it's not going to matter, although I don't think they improved. They obviously traded Brian Burns, and so their defense is going to take a hit. They got rid of a couple pieces on defense, safety Von Bell as well. And the Saints, I guess you welcome Derek Carr back if he could stay healthy, and maybe you ride with that, but I don't feel like they got much better either. And then you look at the Atlanta Falcons and you add the quarterback that was missing a year ago. You add Darnell Mooney in free agency, the wide receiver. as well. It just feels like the Falcons are the one team that took a step forward, and they were close to competing in this division a year ago. There is no doubt in my mind, and look, I could be wrong, but there's no doubt in my mind that they're the best team in the NFC South right now.
And to tie a bow on what you've just said, they brought in Raheem Morris, who's familiar with the franchise, but I feel like his time in Los Angeles is going to make him even better than when he was previously at the Falcons. He's been in a winning organization. They've won a Super Bowl, and whatever misgivings we have about Arthur Smith, that has to be an upgrade at the coach, right?
Yeah, and the offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson, too, who was a Sean McVay, obviously head coach of the Rams. He's been a disciple there. I'm a big fan of his as well. So, yeah, you do get that culture. And Raheem is a guy that's been familiar here in Atlanta. Obviously, he had coached before in Tampa, so he knows the NFC South. He's also, like I said, he was on Dan Quinn's staff. He was an interim coach, head coach, when Dan Quinn was fired. So he spent quite a lot of time handling things as need be, and learned essentially from what did not work the first time around in Tampa. People are very excited about him. And then, you know, some people may not be as familiar with Zach Robinson, but I am very happy and very excited about what he can bring as well. This, quite frankly, is a team that needs to be taking serious steps forward. And they've pulled the pieces in. A coach you trust, an offensive coordinator that's young, energetic, and hopefully a little bit renegade as well, and the quarterback that you so sorely missed a year ago. So it is full steam ahead for the Atlanta Falcons. They got some stuff to figure out on defense. There's no denying that. They are not a fully complete team, but I would be shocked if they don't win this division by maybe two or three games.
Okay, I'm just making a quiet note. Very good. So I landed to win 10-plus games. I like it. I'm making a note. Now, just going back to your interview quickly, I believe Kirk Cousins has some links to Atlanta through his wife, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, his wife has family here. She went to the University of Georgia. They have spent a lot of time in Atlanta, to be honest, in the offseason. I did not know this, but he has spent the last six offseasons before, when he was with Minnesota, working and training in Atlanta. So he is very tied into Atlanta, and it is a place of comfort for them. So that's a good little connection to have as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look forward to seeing how that plays out. Justin?
Yes, indeed. We are very excited to see how all this plays out. First off, Abe, welcome back. It's great hearing from you again. One of my favorite voices in radio. Now, it was just announced very recently that running back Damian Harris has announced his retirement after five seasons. A little bit shocking given the fact that I did quite enjoy watching him play, but could this help prompt a question regarding the lifespan of running backs in the NFL?
You know, the lifespan of running backs has been relatively short anyways. You know, I don't know the full story behind Damian Harris. I would be interested to know what interest there was in him. You know, in terms of locking on with the team, when you're a fringe guy, like, it's crazy to see some of these quarterbacks, like, just stay fringe guys. Right. And like you switch teams every couple of two or three times a year, you're on practice squad, stuff like stay in it when you're not really there. It's a little bit different, but I do think you're going to see certain fringe guys like Damian Harris. And I'm not using that term in any manner of disrespect. But he's not a workhorse either. I just don't know if at the running back position, the beatdown that you take on your body is worth dealing with for the rest of your life. And I'm not surprised. I think you're going to see a lot of guys step away early when you think maybe they still got it. I know Aaron Donald just retired. I mean, look, Aaron Donald was still the best defensive tackle in the NFL. He didn't have the fire. He probably doesn't want to deal with the injuries. I totally understand that, but I think this is such a brutal, brutal sport, the NFL, that if you're not really making it work, if you're not making the big bucks to where the risk-reward of the physicality of this sport is there, I don't blame guys for stepping away. And if you're on veterans minimum or rookie deals and it's just not there for you, I think you're going to see a lot more of that.
really can we see now with a bunch of players essentially retiring from NFL but still playing in other leagues like XFL or the CFL?
I don't think you're going to see the good ones do that. I think that is still back to like the fringe guys who, is it better to be on a practice squad in the NFL where you're never active on game day, or is it better to be in the CFL or the XFL where you're getting some real action and maybe you become a star, or, you know, even if the money is less or equal. And so I do think there's that discussion. I don't think you're going to see the big stars though do it, unless, and we've seen this in the past, guys who have legal issues, guys that are trying to get right in some sort of manner, you know, maybe forced to do that because the NFL teams aren't calling yet. But I don't think you'll see that from the big name guys.
That's fair. I mean, you would know best. The Niners GM, John Lynch, he has come out right to say that, Brendan Ayuk isn't available. Okay. So he's not available for trade. Which I guess one could argue this is actually emphasizing the team's plan to maintain a core roster despite speculation. What say you, good sir?
Yeah, I think they're very close, to be honest. I mean, they were in the Super Bowl this past year. I can't imagine that you're trying to break things apart now. You still feel like the best team in the NFC. And you've got Brock Purdy on that cheap rookie deal for the moment, until you have to extend him at some point. So I would make as many runs at this as while your quarterback's on that rookie deal as possible, because once you have to extend him and start paying him $40 or $50 million, you know, every single year, you are going to have to decide who you're cutting bait with. Mm. But right now, while he's on that rookie deal, and it's quite a rookie deal, obviously being a seventh rounder, not even a first rounder, stuff like that, you're in the window. I mean, you're in Shanahan's window. That doesn't mean that you necessarily don't have a window once you extend Brock Purdy, but you're in the window. You have to keep making a run at this right now. I totally agree with that decision.
I'm glad. Yeah, I mean, that seems like a pretty good way to handle everything, given the fact the way you just definitely explained it to me that I can understand. So that's good for us, good for them. But to carry on that point real quick, if you're somebody who's a bit of an average fan, like, so for instance, we're watching the Super Bowl and my cousin couldn't name most players. Like, I'm just slightly better than him. Who would you say they would need to sign to kind of give him that extra star power? And is that person going to be available?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest weakness of the Niners, and they have been banged up. You know, look, Greenlaw goes down. I mean, who knows how the game changes if he doesn't randomly tear his leg trying to run onto the field. You know, I think their weakness though is in the defensive backfield, the secondary. There's a couple of safeties, like Stephon Gilmore is out there in free agency. He had a short-term deal with the Cowboys after leaving the Patriots. I mean, that's a guy that I would look at and say, hey, maybe we can boost our secondary a little bit. You know, Legarius Sneed would have been interesting, but that would have been a problem with the money to trade for him. But there are still some good safeties. Von Bell was released by the Panthers. I'm a big fan. Jeremy Chinn, I think, was released by the Panthers. Big fan of his as well. So probably just clean a couple of things up on the secondary. Stay healthy on your defensive line. You've obviously got Nick Bosa and a couple of behemoths up front. But, you know, maybe the secondary is where I would approach things.
I like that. What say you, Nee?
Yeah, as a 49ers fan, I'm going to co-sign what Abe is saying there. It's been an Achilles heel for the last two or three seasons. When Talanoa Hufanga went down, the strong safety for the Niners, that was a big hole that probably never got filled down the stretch in the season. And yeah, Jeremy Chinn would be nice. Jeremy Chinn is a bit of a hybrid linebacker safety kind of guy. He can play in coverage, which is what Dre Greenlaw does. He does a little bit of coverage while Fred Warner is doing the dirty work. He can do a bit of both. So I would like to see someone like that replacing Greenlaw while he recovers. But at the same time, cornerback has been an issue. Abe, want to get your thoughts on this. Do you think teams are, well, some teams are just no longer paying quarterbacks. They're just rather trying to build through the draft at the perimeter position.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I think there's a couple of different ways to approach it, right? Like, if you have the quarterback that actually makes the difference, you have to pay him, right? Like, if you have Patrick Mahomes, and obviously they just won back-to-back titles with him making $50 million per year, like, there are ways on the salary cap to make this work. If you have the Joe Burrows or Lamar Jackson, you have to pay those guys. But what you cannot do is pay a guy that is not changing the game for you. You can't pay Daniel Jones, right? Like the Giants are paying Daniel Jones $40 million a year, and they're just kind of stuck with him. And if a guy's not going to win you games, if he's just a game manager, you've got to build as much as you can all over the rest of the field and just hope you hit a young guy for cheap that's the right guy. I feel pretty strongly about that. I mean, we obviously saw it in the early stage with Patrick Mahomes, right, before he signed his $500 million deal. You know, he was playing for scraps, right? He was on his rookie deal, and the Chiefs were winning then. And you see it now with Brock Purdy as well, right? I mean, this is a team that is so complete with the exception of that defensive secondary. And then you just get a guy and you can just kind of strike gold. Now, the problem is if you miss on those quarterbacks, right? Like you can build up the team, but if the guy's just a total bust, total bum, you're still not going to win. But I do think there is some interesting decisions to be made moving forward just across the league as salaries go up, as the salary cap goes up. Are you better off just spending everywhere across the board and just hoping that you strike gold for 2 or 3 years with a cheap quarterback? Ultimately, it's going to be an interesting path to follow because we'll have to see who wins the next couple of Super Bowls, right? Like Tom Brady kind of was in the middle because he made a good chunk of money, but he wasn't maximizing his value either. He would always leave some money on the table so the team could build. But if Mahomes is winning, if Dak Prescott finds a way to win, if Lamar Jackson, like those are all teams with guys on big, big deals. So until we see someone else on a lower price deal actually win a Super Bowl, as much as I like the idea of it, I don't know if I can actually push forward with it.
Yeah, and Brock Purdy was maybe a quarter or a quarter and a half away from pushing that narrative further, but Mr. Mahomes came through in the end on that one. So
yeah,
we'll have to wait another season to see if that holds in terms of spending or building through the, as I say, building with a cheap contract. So one contract I wanted to talk about is a player that the Falcons actually drafted in the first round in 2020, cornerback A.J. Terrell. Now, when he was taken in the first, he's obviously proven himself and earned himself a future with the Falcons. Was that always the case with him when he first burst on the scene, or was that something that came over time?
Well, I mean, look, A.J. Terrell's a guy that was drafted high, expecting to become like a cornerback one. And then in his second year, he kind of broke out to the point where you're like, wow, this guy like might be the best cornerback, not on the team, not in the NFC South, but like in the entire league. Whether you felt that way watching him play or not, the statistics showed that he was probably the best corner in the entire NFL in his second season. Unfortunately, the last 2 years have dipped back down a little bit. And so it is a situation where this is a really important year for him because the team does have to decide. It's two decisions, right? It's his decision to kind of gauge his value because there's a price that's probably beneficial for him and the team. But if he feels that he's one of the best corners in the NFL and is going to ask for $20 to $22-23 million, that's a decision the team may move on from. So it kind of goes both ways. How does he feel? And then what does the team feel? And then I'm sure they'll talk. But I think he's a very, very good corner. I don't think he's quite elite in terms of some of the very, very top-end corners.
There's my dog.
Your dog's disagreeing. Down, your Jimmy. Dog thinks Terrell's elite.
But I think he's better than the past 2 years have shown. Come here. Yeah, I think he's better.
Your dog's
I took her for a walk. I don't know what her problem is. Yeah, I do think he's better in the past 2 years have showed. I do think ultimately they find a number that works for both. I don't think it's going to be over $20 million. I think if they can find a path to signing him for like 16.5 or 17.5, I think that would be pretty agreeable to both parties.
Indeed. And if not, you can always get on the phone to San Francisco. I'm sure they'll be interested. Anyway, while I have a galaxy brain moment, let's talk about the other tenants at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Atlanta United. Because we're in Toronto, you're in Atlanta, the TSC did play against the Five Stripes of Atlanta over the weekend. Were you expecting TSC to come out the way they did against Atlanta United at home?
Yeah, if we're going to be honest, I really was. Atlanta United was missing so many players due to international duty. And I know Toronto FC was missing a number of guys, but it was a little bit different, in my opinion. They were hurt, not called up. I know one guy was out due to international duty. But, you know, when I look at things, it was just you're missing two of probably the top 10 to 12 players in all of MLS with Giakoumakis and Almada. You're center back got hurt, Steon Gregerson, with a meniscus injury. Caleb Wiley, who's an up-and-comer as well. And so, to be honest, I did not feel that they were going to get points. I would have been very happy if they found a way to get a draw. I thought too much talent was off the field for Atlanta United. No offense to anyone listening. I do think they're still quite stronger than Toronto FC. But this was a result that I expected. And I will say this, Toronto FC has been one of the major, major surprises early in the MLS season, what they've been able to accomplish here through five games.
Yeah, it's definitely been eye-opening, and what a different... Okay, I mean, they did go from Bob Bradley to an interim to John Herdman, but so far, it seems like the former Canada manager has not just got the team that he wants, but he's got the two marquee players, Insigne and Bernardeschi, he's got them to buy in, because that was what the other two guys weren't able to do. So hopefully for the team and for his sake, that can continue. But Justin, what are your thoughts on TFC so far this season?
TFC is doing better than I think everybody thought they were going to. And if you're saying that you believe they were going to do this well, you are a liar. You lie like a rug. We saw last year's. It was absolutely like terrible, pathetic season. But I have a question for you, good sir. And now this may just be because I'm not from Atlanta, but can you tell me what it means to win the Atlanta way?
I don't know. I don't think I've heard that. In what reference really? would that have been?
Coach Gonzalo Pineda. He was talking about an impressor. He's like, we have to win the Atlanta United way. And I'm like, yeah, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I think he just means they need to play their game. And I think what he was probably referring to, because I know he made mention of this quite a few times over the course of the week leading up to the game, is we're playing the same style, even though we're missing so many of our key players. And he probably meant win the way that the team is familiar with, have some possession, find a couple of counters, but... That'd be my guess is what he was referring to. But yeah, I hope it's not something that I've been sleeping on, because I have no idea if not.
I mean, I've definitely been sleeping on it myself, because I had no idea what it is. And I'm very, very curious. And one day we'll get him on here just to ask that question. And we'll boot him off after. Do you pay much attention to Atlanta United 2's team? Or are we just...
I keep like loose track of it. I kind of see the scores and maybe see who tallied a goal, but I'm not really into it or following it. I just kind of see names and stats every once in a while.
Okay, because I was going to say they've seemed to be doing pretty well. They just recently got a 4-0 victory over Carolina, which isn't like outstanding, but it seems to be like they have like a strategy and like a player development system going on there, which seems to be doing fairly well, especially the past couple seasons. So I guess you might be able to actually probably answer this. You know, it's probably better than I do, but then what can we hope to see from Atlanta United 2's developmental league, which could drip over to Atlanta United's main roster.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys, to be honest. And a couple have been called up and maybe didn't see action, but Efren Morales, Luke Brennan, who tallied a goal, are some of the guys. Noah Cobb, who's 18, 19 years old, is now filling in with Atlanta United. But yeah, there is a lot of talent down there that you're going to be seeing in an Atlanta United jersey. And if what people are saying about Cobb is accurate, a lot of people think he's a future center back for the U.S. men's national team. And so that's definitely a name to watch. But Morales, Brennan, I'm trying to remember his name. I think Ashton Moore, if I might have screwed that name up, but he's a young, I think 17-year-old as well. There's a lot of talent down there, and they're going to be mixing them in and finding ways to get them up to the parent squad a little bit. I mean, they're loaded, and they're the future of Atlanta United, and it's very exciting time to be weaving those guys in as they continue to develop.
It seems like a good time. I mean, who doesn't love to watch their tier twos do so well? Again, if we're going to switch to basketball real quick, as a Raptors fan, I saw the 905 win, and then I saw the Raptors win like 2 years after that. Oh, it was glorious. Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet. Now, one more question before I pass you off to the man with the wonderful accent. Atlanta United is very known for having a huge, strong connection with their fans and the community. I remember when Atlanta was coming out, we had rappers over there, if I'm not mistaken. I feel like T.I. was there at one point. Is there anything happening in the 2024 season that we should know about for fan engagement or community engagement?
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes and no. It's tough because they do a pretty good job of keeping a lid on exactly who's going to be involved. But they do this thing every game beforehand called the Golden Spike. And it's almost always a relatively big-name celebrity doing it. It might be a pro athlete from Atlanta. I'm sure Kirk Cousins, who we discussed earlier, he'll probably be lined up at some point this season at an Atlanta United game. They started the season off with Big Boy, though. And so I'm excited to see who they'll have this weekend when they host Chicago. But the Golden Spike is like always the cool part to see, like some of those celebrities that you talked about at Atlanta United games. Like, it's obviously one thing to be at an Atlanta Hawks games, and the Hawks crowd was rocking a couple of days ago. You had Anne Hathaway was in town, Don Cheadle was in town. You know, the Hawks game's always popping, but Atlanta United's got its fair share of celebrity fans as well.
That's what I like to hear. Knee?
Yeah, it's where it's at in Atlanta, and this summer is going to be huge, not just for the five stripes of Atlanta United, but we've got the Copa America going down to Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Is that starting to enter the minds of the fans down there? Abe, I know the U.S. men's national team defeated Mexico over the weekend, another 2-0, which I'm sure makes everyone happy, but you got Lionel Messi, he's facing off against Canada, which is going to be one that we'll be watching for sure on June 20. Is Copa America, what's the mood like when it comes to Copa America? Is it still too far away for the fans?
Yeah, it's interesting. Copa America is just one of a number of events planned internationally in the soccer world in Atlanta. And we've got the U.S. women's national team coming in a couple of weeks for the She Believes Cup. And so that should be a fun one. I believe Canada is involved as well. Brazil and maybe Japan.
Yes,
don't quote me on
right.
that. I
yeah.
think those are the four teams.
Yeah.
So that's going to be at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Obviously, the World Cup in a couple of years is the big prize, right? And so I think a lot of people are kind of just viewing Copa as maybe a ramp up, a warm up, and kind of learn what we need to learn before the big show really gets here. People are not kind of ramped up totally yet. I think after we get through the She Believes Cup and you start creeping down to that tournament actually beginning, it's gonna be big here. It's so, you know, obviously we saw in Dallas there was quite a Mexican contingent the other night, but Atlanta, it shows up for whatever country it is, especially from Latin America, South America, Central America. There's going to be huge fan bases from whomever shows up to play here. So it's very exciting.
For sure. And you touched on the She Believes Cup. That's going to be interesting for me because I was following the CONCACAF Gold Cup recently, and the U.S. won that as well. Congratulations. doing the double there. But they defeated Canada in the semifinal on the way there. Now, that was like water polo. The pitch is waterlogged. I'm surprised the game went ahead, to be honest, but it is what it is. I do get the sense that Canada played it a lot closer than the scoreboard might have reflected. Now, it did go to penalties, but it did. If you didn't watch the game, it kind of looked like Canada was battling the U.S. I do feel like the gap between the U.S. and Canada has closed over the last year or two. So, with the Olympic competition on the horizon at Paris, I do think this She Believes Cup could be interesting with the matches coming up. What say you?
Yeah, I did watch that game, and I would say Canada was largely the better team, if not for the pitch. Obviously, the one goal the United States scored in regulation, that happens because of the atrocity of that field. Pass back to the goalie that was just killed on impact on a puddle, and a U.S. player is there to retrieve and score. I thought Canada looked outstanding, and the U.S. has a lot of things to figure out. I think they're solid up the back and they're pretty solid up top, but there is some question marks to be had in the middle of the field for them. And so I think teams, and this is something that's been going on for 20 or 30 years now, or maybe 30 is too much, 20 years, I'll say. Teams are not scared of the United States women's team anymore. They don't go in with the mindset that we've already lost. And I think that does allow teams to be more competitive. It does allow for a different approach. And that's something that the U.S. has had to deal with now in recent years. We've seen a lot of teams really close that gap. Canada possibly closest among them.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like Canada's weakness, honestly, it's not on the pitch. I think if Canada can sort out its administrative issues that it's had, then it'll be, it does make a difference. When I look at the way the team played in the lead up to the Women's World Cup last year, compared to the way they've played in the Gold Cup and matches after the World Cup last year against Australia and also New Zealand, not having that cloud of administrative or disputes, it does make a difference. It seems like the players are playing a lot more freer this time around. So hopefully there's no more of that in the lead up to not only She Believes Cup, but also the Olympics. And then we'll see the real Canadian women's national team. And that team, that has some potential. The depth is there. I know Christine Sinclair is the name that many have pointed to over the last, couple of decades, but there are so many great young players whose names people are going to learn about this summer. It's going to be the likes of Adriana Leon, Jesse Fleming, Jordan Huitema. These are names that we know about here in Canada, but names that everyone else is going to know about later on, and it's going to be a beautiful thing. Now, Abe, I'm going to ask a question specific to Georgia. You got to help us out here, because we had someone on once upon a time, and they said something about a catfish. Can you help us out with that? What is a catfish?
You mean like just the actual animal? What's a catfish?
They said it's like a dish. Is that correct?
Like fried catfish. Like you catch a catfish and then you fry it up.
Right. Okay. All right. So that's what it was, Justin.
So it's like an actual. So a catfish. a catfish is an actual fish, right? And yeah, you flatten that baby out, you fry it, put a little lemon on it, you're good to go.
All right.
I've never had it.
It's actually really good. Fried catfish is delicious.
I mean, being from the East Coast, I've had quite a lot of fish in my day, and catfish is one that eludes me. I've had rainbow trout. I don't even know if that's close in comparison.
I don't think I've had trout as well. I don't know if I've had a fried trout. Maybe grilled or steamed, I guess. No, fried catfish is very good. I don't know if I would trust anyone up north to make it. You'd have to find the right soul food provider to get it done. But I'm sure it's around. I'm sure you can find someone that's trustworthy.
Yeah.
Noted.
No, we're going to Georgia to try it. I feel like I hear you saying yes. The catfish is a type of fish, but the dish, we're going to try that in Georgia. We're not trusting anyone up here.
So. Yeah, anywhere in the South, anywhere the Southeastern Conference plays football, you're probably okay getting a catfish. You can go to Louisiana, Bama, any of those spots. You good?
Okay. And where can the good people go to find your good cooking on social media?
Yeah, just on the Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, just at Abe Gordon. You could find me there. And then on Instagram, I don't share a ton, but Instagram and Threads at Abe_Gordon.
There we go. Definitely get on Threads if you haven't already. It's growing. I'm seeing a lot of people joining, a lot of engagement, a lot of good stuff out there. So would recommend Threads, most definitely. And would definitely recommend checking out Abe Gordon's work. Found out about him through another friend of the show, Jason Longshore. Shout out to him. So if you can, make sure you tune in to 92.9 The Game when you want to hear all things Atlanta. You can find it online and I believe on the Odyssey app and iHeartRadio. Is that correct, Abe?
Yeah, that's correct. You got it.
There we go. This has been a great chat, Abe. I've been your host, Nate Wallace Bruce, joined by Justin Williams, and you've been listening to the Pro Sports Podcasters.
Cheers, guys.
And that's the game. We've reached full time on this episode of Pro Sports Podcasters. Your enthusiasm and support drive us forward, and for that, we're really grateful.
If you've enjoyed today's journey through the thrilling world of sports, please consider leaving us a review. Your feedback not only helps improve us, but also connects us to the community.
So don't forget to visit our website at prosportspodcasters.com
for exclusive content, episodes, and the latest updates in the realm of professional sports, where no sport is left behind.